Welcome to The Buzz. I'm Christopher Conover. This week, we revisit a trip down the Verde River. The Public Media Journalists Association announced winners for its annual awards this week, and The Buzz brought home two of them. A first place for an episode featuring interviews with University of Arizona students who lived through the events that culminated in the shooting death of Dr. Thomas Meixner, and a second place finish for an episode that took a trip down an important Arizona waterway. The Verde River is the longest river in Arizona that still runs from its original starting point to its terminus. The river begins near Perkinsville in Yavapai County and empties into the Salt River near Fountain Hills. Last September, we hopped in kayaks north of Clarkdale with Doug Van Gossig, the executive director at the Verde River Institute.
As you're going through the little rapids that we go through, and they're relatively small rapids, the first one is right here behind us. Your job is just to keep yourself in the middle of the high water in the rapid. So there's usually kind of a V that forms downstream as the rapid goes. If you go right through the top of that V, you're right where you should be.
Von Gossig notes that the water is usually a little clearer than it is for our trip, but sediment has made it cloudy.
This is stuff primarily from Sycamore Canyon, upstream about 8 miles from here.
Sycamore Canyon is the first main tributary for the Verde. It contributes about a fifth of its flow. Parts of the canyon burned in a 2021 wildfire along with 36,000 acres. The fire spread up the canyon to the northeast, burning so far up the canyon that parts of Flagstaff were put on evacuation notice.
You can see that right here on my left, you can see the debris pile. So that debris pile was left from the Rafael fire, and all of this wood that you see in there, you'll see a lot of it is burned. And then a month after the fire, this 18,000 acres of fire scar, we had the largest monsoonal storms that had ever occurred in the Verde Valley. And two of them sat right above the fire scar and brought every bit of that dirt, ash, tree limbs, stumps down the Verde River. You see, there's kind of a mound of dirt behind me here. That's all new silt. This should be right here at the level of my paddle.
And that's a significant height. I mean, that's not a couple of inches.
This was 7 feet high. But what that also brought down with it was organics. So this very, very rich soil now is covering an area that's used to pretty poor soil, a lot of sand and rock and whatnot. So it's populated by trees that, you know, that's the garden they like to grow in. And now all of a sudden you have this garden that's been over-fertilized. And if you look at the bank here, we've got a lot of cocklebur, you've got a lot of different grasses, is creeping in toward the river now. And the worst part of it though is that a couple of our really wonderful, significant trees like Arizona alder have been dying off ever since this silt was introduced.
Rivers are living organisms, if you will, so they do change over time, but it sounds like because of the fire and the climate change that has brought all of that, it's changing a lot faster than anyone expected.
And in unpredictable ways. So nobody that you ever talked to before would have said, oh yeah, you're going to lose your alders. If you lose your alders, you might be going to lose your Dobson flies. They'd like to lay their eggs on alder trees because the alder trees overhang the river and the larvae will fall into the water when they hatch. Belted kingfishers love to eat Dobson fly larvae. All of a sudden, the belted kingfishers are adversely affected by this, and why would they be? So here's another thing that has changed in this particular stretch. Just on the other side of river right over here is a farm. And that farmer also had about 25 Angus cattle, kept them penned in over there in pastures and whatnot, but they always got out because they're highly motivated to get to the river.
Right, lots of water.
Lots of water and food. Yeah. And so these cows were always out here, and I was always calling the rancher and helping him find ways to, you know, enclose his cattle. And finally, he just decided he didn't want to hear from me anymore because I was sending him a picture every day. Here's your cow. You know? So he decided to just sell the cows. Since then, the bank ecosystem is completely changed. And we don't know quite how much of this is because the cattle are no longer here, mowing it down and breaking it down with their hooves as they get down and drink and all of those things that cattle do. And how much of it is the Raphael fire and that silt. How much of it is just other aspects of climate change. But what we've noticed, and every outfitter who's out here, you know, every day or several times a week, has remarked on what a manifest change there is in the stream bank ecosystem.
Manifest change in a good way or a bad way?
Sure.
Okay.
You pick.
Let me ask about our friends who we can hear coming up behind us.
This is a commercial here. Trip.
We're sitting here in kayaks on the river.
Right.
We all love the outdoors. Are we having, because of the changes here, a larger negative impact on the river?
No, that's a really good question. And when we first started this project in the town of Clarkdale to allow a lot of people to start enjoying it, everybody came out and said, oh, you're going to ruin the river. You're going to love it to death. It's going to become just like the Salt River. And so that's why we put the river ambassadors, to kind of see that people behaved and that they honored the river and whatnot for what it is. And then the commercial outfitters like this one, this is Outdoor Adventure Center out of Cottonwood. And they and I and all the other outfitters are licensed to the town of Clarkdale. And we have a long list of behaviors that we have to follow. Yeah, these are people from all over the country or all over the world, actually, that come out here and take a ride down the river. And universally, it's like, I never knew there was anything like this in Arizona, you know?
And like you said, it exposes. And once they go home, be it to Phoenix or Tucson or even Flagstaff or somewhere in between or somewhere far flung, and say, I was at, you know, this beautiful spot, and you got another one.
Yeah, that's exactly why we did this. I was the mayor of Clarkdale for 17 years, and so we built this whole thing with my love of the river being central in a lot of that. And one of the things that I would say in public meetings was, yes, you're going to have, there are a few people that live along the river who were really worried that they were going to have all these people in their backyard. And I said, you might, and we're going to do everything we can. There are signs up that say, be respectful of residents and all of the stuff. And the outfitters are very cognizant of that. But I said, what your choice is here is, don't put people on the river and lose it entirely, or put up with a little more traffic on the river and save the river. So here's something really quickly. One of the big things we take notice of along the Verde River is the number of dragonflies and damselflies. They're called the odonates. And we've noticed that if we want to find an American ruby spot, we have to look over there. But if we want to find a Mexican forktail, we have to look over here.
Opposite sides of the river.
Opposite sides of the river. Do you think it's because they can tell left from right, or?
It probably has to do with what's grown and sun exposure and things like that.
Okay, so sun exposure, it's exactly right. And what's growing, because of the sun exposure, different things grow on different sides. And the water's cooler in the shade than it is over there, and the direct sunlight. There was a time where there were no trees, there was no grass, there were no bushes, there was no cocklebur, there was nothing but rocks and gravel all along the river in the Verde Valley. And you know what was going on at the time? Smelters.
I was gonna say mining, but yeah,
mining and smeltering is actually the big polluter. And the smelters created such bad air quality and water quality that no plants would grow. And the miners at the time would cut trees that were there for firewood and whatnot. And so the pictures that you have of this spot where we're sitting right now is nothing but a gravel parking lot. And would you believe that this came up since 1953? Most of this since 1994, by the way.
Yeah, we have full-size trees here, and
yeah,
you said lots of different grasses.
Gigantic diversity. It healed. It will heal. Sometimes it just takes time, and you do irreplaceable damage along the way. So it'll never be what it was before the mines were here. And so if you do a restoration project, if you want to bring a damaged area back to some kind of its glory days, you've got to define which of the glory days you want to try to reproduce and which ones are possible and which ones are achievable from an economic standpoint and all of that. These guys are late, by the way. They usually aren't here this late in the season, the cicadas.
Oh, it's still a little warm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's the sound of summer.
Yeah, pretty soon it'll be the Christmas sound, you know?
Yeah.
You know, one of the things I think about is what was this like for those kids that lived in those houses on the cliff, the Sinawa kids?
Yeah, because we have those cliff dwellings that we can see now, and what did it look like for them?
So for them, it was this very broad braided channel of slow flowing river, which meant a lot of malaria, a lot of mosquitoes.
Right.
Well, a lot of stuff about that is not good. And an incised channel will eliminate mosquitoes practically because the water is running
too fast.
Too
quickly. Yeah.
Yeah, you couldn't have kayaked this river before it incised, when the beavers were
too
still
shallow.
Here. And the beavers, by the way, are back. They just don't build dams anymore because they get blown out by fast rivers all the time.
I was going to ask if there was talk about reintroduction of species.
No, but they did reintroduce the otters. They had also fur trapped all the otters out. They had extirpated them completely, the river otters. And so 80s or 90s, Arizona Game and Fish went down to Louisiana and got a bunch of river otters and brought them back here, and now they're very, very common. They're just a major part of the ecosystem because they're the top right river predator. You know what otters eat? Crayfish, which are all non-native invasives. And they came from Louisiana, so they eat them etouffee, they eat them brouillé, they eat them... We're going to go to the right here. So here, wait, pull over here. You see this gray trunk tree here?
Yes.
This is Arizona alder. And the white things that you see on the limb
yes.
here? So those white things are the egg cases of that Dobson fly that I was talking about. And you can see that they put those on the tree right where it overhangs the water here.
Right, so the larvae then drop in.
Right. Because there are spent egg cases that might be 10 or 15 or 20 years old on this tree. So that Arizona alder is the one that we're having the most trouble with right now. And this one's healthy, but look at the base of it, no silt.
Right.
Because it washes out around this big curve that mm-hmm. it's in the middle of, that it's right at the top of. I hate this job.
I can tell. It must be terrible having to come out here.
It's horrible, right? You got to do this almost every day. Of the hundreds of times that I've done this run, I don't think I remember ever not just loving it.
Yeah, it's absolutely beautiful.
And it changes. This year's been the biggest changes we've ever seen.
Changes in what way?
Well, the Raphael silts, for one thing, has really made a big difference in everything. The cows being gone is a big deal. The size of the monsoons has changed everything. The number of plants, the streamside vegetation is unbelievably different than what it was just a year ago. And that brought and kept a lot of birds, like the summer tanagers that we just heard, really should be taking off. They should be going down to Costa Rica, you know. Somebody asked me on one of the trips, I think it was a trip of Salt River Project people,
mm-hmm.
and they said, what do you think's going to happen next year? And I thought for a few seconds, and then I went, I have no idea what's going to happen next month anymore. I could have answered that question years ago. I could reliably have told you what it was going to be like in 2 months or in a year. I said it's completely unpredictable now because of climate change.
You're listening to The Buzz. I'm Christopher Conover. We're looking back on our trip down the Verde River with the Verde River Institute's Doug Van Gossig this week. This episode recently won a Public Media Journalists Association Award.
This river runs all the way from its headwaters to its natural terminus. It's the largest river that does that in the state now. Seven rivers no longer do that in Arizona. So the Verde runs into the salt runs into the Gila runs into the Colorado runs into the ocean. None of those things happens anymore. This one still does. So it's called a Huck Four River. It's four steps from the ocean.
Interesting.
And it's the only Huck Four that still does that. And the only thing as big as a Huck Four. And could we lose it? Yep, we could.
Does this river get affected at all by groundwater pumping, which we see a lot of in southern Arizona?
One to
one. All of our rivers.
Every gallon of water that's taken out of the ground in the watershed is a gallon that doesn't make it to the river.
And I assume this area, like every other area, is growing with people, so there's more demand for the groundwater.
Yes. So the first time, let's say for me, first time I saw the Verde River, I looked back at the historical records. There were about 150 wells in the Verde Valley. There are now close to 8,000 wells. And some of them are industrial wells and municipal wells and agricultural wells. And they withdraw a huge amount of water.
Right.
But anywhere in the watershed, Prescott Valley, Chino Valley, Paulden, this side of Flagstaff, all five of the incorporated communities in the Verde Valley, all use groundwater. And every drop of that groundwater that they take out is a drop that was headed here. I have conservation friends, people that work on the Verde River, who have no faith that the river will continue to flow. I just know that it's impossible to predict, and so I tend to act as though it will. You should plan for the worst, but work with what you've got.
So this is the big slag pile here on our right.
There's 20 million tons of slag.
And it's feet from the river.
Oh, no. It's in the river.
It would have to be.
The river didn't used to run here. That's pushed it over here. The river used to run way back on the other side of it, about a quarter mile over that way. And the smelter just kept dumping it essentially into the river and dumping it and dumping it until they dumped 20 million tons of it. That's almost a half mile long as we go down. And it pushed the river over here to the east as it went in.
That cannot be good for water quality.
It doesn't have any impact.
Really?
There's no impact that we've been able to measure from the slag pile. It's what's vitrified. Let me give you a piece of it here. Let me get it down here. This is the bottom of one of the buckets of slag right here.
That would explain its uniform round nature.
Yeah. So this stuff, what's called ferrosilicates, it's made of iron and silicon primarily, the two waste products of the smelter.
Right.
But, here, come over and take hold of this. And you'll see some of its qualities. This is a guy that's survived every flood since 1950 or whatever. And you notice a couple of things about it. One is it's really heavy.
Yeah, right? That's real. When you said iron, you're not kidding.
Right.
That's heavy.
And look at it's not rounded off.
No, it's not.
It's been through innumerable floods. Every other rock you see out here is round by that time.
Right. It's tumbled by the river. And this has got jagged edges.
Yeah, and that's because it's so hard that it's just like glass.
Yeah.
And so it doesn't leach anything. Everything that could leach out of it was taken out of it in the smelting process.
Yeah, so, it's got some striation. You can see different things in it.
And again, there's 20 million tons. There's about 0.4 to 0.5 ounces of gold in each ton that was just left in it because they couldn't get it out in those technologies. And that means there's about 10 million ounces of gold in that slag pile. I don't know what gold's worth, $1,500 an ounce or something now.
But you said to get it out is economically prohibitive.
It is now. So one of two things can happen, or several things could happen, but one of them is the cost of gold, the price of gold might go to $3,000 an ounce, in which case you might be able to make it economical.
Right.
Or you find an extraction method that gets the gold out a lot cheaper than what's right. available today. So we're in what used to be a pond. It was formed by a dam that was up here. That dam was removed this year in February after, again, a million phone calls from Doug harassing Freeport-McMoRan about the fact that this dam didn't do anything and that it was just bad for the river. When they did, it's a much more diverse ecosystem than it was before.
What was the purpose of the dam?
So on the other side of that mountain right there is a lake called Peck's Lake, which is an old oxbow of the river. And they drilled a hole, a tunnel through it, and built a dam to divert water through the tunnel. And that filled Peck's Lake for a recreational amenity for the miners. I had always said, if the dam ruptures, that's when you should take it out, because now nothing's your fault. You take it out while it's entire, and everything that happens downstream is going to get blamed on you.
But if it's already got water flowing through it,
right.
It wasn't you.
Right. When the dam broke, the local manager and others, and I was writing letters and whatnot, saying, now's the time, take it out. And they all agreed, yeah, all right, we'll take it out finally. So it doesn't feed water to Peck's Lake anymore. And Peck's Lake has little springs, so it's now a kind of a seasonal wetland. It was fun to watch. I did drone work the whole time they were taking it out. Because for the Verde River, this was the biggest event ever. The biggest single conservation project on the Verde ever. So we're approaching our monitoring tract.
So are you just looking at overall river health?
Well, what do you need for monitoring like this is you want a baseline on what was the river like on a particular day, mm-hmm. you know? What did it used to be like? Is this a change? Is it a positive change? You know, what's going on? This is the very beginning of our monitoring tract right here, and we call this the otter latrine.
Yeah, I see that.
Yeah, and if you look at it, it's all crayfish. I mean, they get lazy and eat nothing but lobster, you know?
It's a tough life these otters have.
Yeah. That and they play, and quite often we'll find a bottle or a bobber, or you'll find stuff that they find on the bottom and they play with it,
yeah,
and then they'll leave it up on the shore there. So we call it otter trash.
Well, it's nice, they're helping clean up the river.
Yep. So we're going to pull over to the right for a minute here. This is that giant reed, the Arundo Donax, that they're trying to extirpate now.
Mm.
It's kind of like trying to extirpate Bermuda grass, though.
Yeah.
So this is called Rocky Rapid, and it's more critical that you be in exactly the right place right at the end. If you're not, you're gonna go through this little, over a little waterfall, literally, then down a chute, and it wants to kick the nose of your boat over into the rocks on the right. If it does, your boat is gonna go sideways, and you're going to go out of it.
Yeah, that one's a little more fun.
Yeah. That one will be a class 3 or class 4 in a big flood.
Oh, I bet.
I mean, that standing wave that you went through at
yeah.
the top of this one,
yeah,
that thing's like 4 or 5 feet high.
That's fun.
It's really fun.
That'd be really fun.
Just boom, bam, whoom, and then up the other side.
So as we near the end of our paddle here, beautiful run. You were mayor. You've spent all this time, you know, devoted to protecting this river. Why?
This river is part of my blood. I mean, it's my passion in life. It always has been since I was a kid. It was where I always wanted to be. I would sit by streams in Arizona when I was a kid and just be mesmerized by the number of insects and birds and plants around me, and by the sound of the water. And the Verde in particular has been in my life for, 65 years. And I've been working on conservation of the Verde for almost 40 now.
Well, it says something. You were in the Air Force, probably went around the world, came home to the Verde.
And I came home to the Verde, right? And I didn't live here in the Verde Valley when I was a kid. I lived in Prescott. So we would come over and visit people over here. And it was always just the best time of my life. And my house now sits over the river. It sits on the cliff up above the river where I can watch it and hear it. And it's just in my blood. For most river people, they have a special place in their heart and in their body and their head for running water. And we know that it's threatened. We know that it's endangered. And we want to work really hard so other people will share that experience, you know. Other people will have this kind of a thing in their life, and it's not altogether clear that they always will. That's an unacceptable end, you know.
And that's the buzz for this week. The Buzz will host a live show at the Cochise College campus in Douglas on July 10th. Our topic will be water and the new active management area. More details and a link to reserve seats are on our website. You can find all our episodes online at azpm.org and subscribe to our show wherever you get your podcasts. Just search for The Buzz Arizona. We're also on the NPR app. Zach Ziegler is our producer with production help from Desiree Tucker. Our music is by Enter the Haggis. I'm Christopher Conover. Thanks for listening.
Arizona Public Media's original programming is made possible in part by the Community Service Grant from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.